Of course, that didn't stop us from blowing our savings on the yo-yo fad a year later. Everyone seemed to need 10 of them. And then on the records, t-shirts, and posters of a rock band named Kiss 2 years after that. Fads exist to make kids give up their money. By the time it was considered really pathetic to own anything with the Kiss logo on it, most of us started looking for status in the clothes we wore. Wacky packs, yo-yos, and Kiss albums piled up in the back of the closet while we saved up for expensive polo shirts with little alligator logos and Puma sneakers. This goes to prove my theory that fashion is on a 30-year cycle. What did my daughter Anna beg me for last year? Vintage Puma sneakers. Basically, the cost of being cool kept rising. That's how it works as you get older. The cost of being cool goes up. Having the right shirts and sneakers becomes wearing the right watch, owning the right car, and living in the right neighborhood, hopefully in the nicest house on your block. When you devote your life to trying to impress others, what you spend your money on changes over the years, but the reason you're spending it really doesn't. It's the LPD factor. The easiest way to impress people is by buying stuff. Stuff that will make you look stylish or smart or just plain cool. That's not entirely a bad thing, because impressing other people is good for your self-esteem. Wanting other people to like you or approve of you, or even to think you're cool, is about as basic as eating or sleeping. The problems start when the only way you can think of to win approval is through what you wear or own, and not from who you are. You are so much more than your stuff. If I asked you to tell me about your best friends, would you give me a list of all the designer labels they wear? Would you tell me where they shop? Of course not. You'd tell me what they're good at, what makes them laugh, maybe what they like to do. You'd tell me about them, not their clothes and possessions. Those things are just stuff. Stuff, when you think about it, isn't really that important. I wrecked a Chevy station wagon when I was 19. Middle of the day, rain-slicked street, me driving too fast and not paying enough attention to the car in front of me to see that it was suddenly slowing down. By the time I noticed, it was too late. I hit the brakes and tried to steer away, but only managed to slide sideways. My side of the car slammed into the other car's rear bumper, and my head hit the window. When the ambulance came, it was quickly determined that everyone else was fine, and I didn't have much more than a nasty headache. In other words, I was going to live long enough for my father to kill me, which he would definitely do just as soon as he found out what I'd done to his car. The ambulance guys took me to the hospital, where they said I had a mild concussion. I told the doc I was pretty sure I'd be back, in much worse shape, when my dad was done with me. I was kidding, or at least I hoped so. I don't remember who picked me up from the hospital that day. I just remember that it was a long ride home, and my dad called me into the den as soon as I got in. "You okay?" he asked, and I launched right into how sorry I was about the car. He put his hand up, telling me to stop talking. "Cars we can replace," he said. "Kids, we can't." That's all my dad ever said about that car. Now, because my father is the person that he is, I spent the next 10 years getting mini lectures every time the forecast called for rain. But you know what? I never minded those lectures, because when it really mattered, when something bad had happened, he made it clear what was important. I was. The car could be replaced. The car was stuff. Too many people don't understand that. They think we're put on the earth to take care of our stuff, rather than letting our stuff make our lives easier or better. My friend Mark's dad collected rare books, and he kept them in a glass bookcase in his study. It stood in a corner that never got sunlight because Mark's dad didn't want the dust jackets to fade. He only handled his books with special cotton gloves. In 9th grade, Mark and his class did a project on Charles Dickens. He knew that his father would never let him bring in his first edition of Dickens' Great Expectations, which had been published in 3 volumes in 1861, but he didn't see the harm in carefully taking the books out of the case and photographing them so his class could see what popular novels looked like in the 19th century. This one had ads in it. Mark mounted the photos on a big sheet of poster board and wrote detailed captions for each one. He saved room on one corner of his project to write a little dedication to my father, who taught me to appreciate fine books. He got an A, which his teacher wrote in red marker just above the dedication. Knowing Mark, I suspect that an A didn't happen too often. So when he brought that project home to show his dad, he was just about bursting with pride. His dad took one look at it and blew up at him. "How could you take that book out of the case without asking?" his father wanted to know. "How could you be so stupid? Were you trying to impress your friends?" Mark's father looked at the project for about 1 second, just long enough to get good and mad, and then he took the better part of a half hour going over the Dickens volumes, making sure Mark hadn't creased, smudged, or damaged them in any way. When he was satisfied that Dickens was unharmed, he gave Mark a second blast. "I'm so disappointed in you," he said. The dedication and the grade were never mentioned. Mark took the project, which had taken him hours to put together and which he had been so excited to show his dad, back to his room, and slowly tore it up. Can you imagine any book so valuable that you'd crush someone's spirit just for touching it? Can you think of anything you might own one day that could be more important than your own kids' feelings? Neither can I.